words of my mouth, the meditations of our hearts be pleasing to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I invite you to be seated. So I thought this morning, why don't we talk a little politics, because that's always fun. And I want to start off by talking about the president and the first lady, because everybody has been fascinated lately with the president and the first lady. In fact, there have been cameras that have been snuck into their homes so we could see what was going on inside their home. And so why don't we take a look at that camera? This is at the National Arboretum in Washington, D.C., just about a week ago. And there's the first lady there. This is a pair of eagles, bald eagles who were giving, she gave birth to two eggs, and they're waiting for the two to hatch. And people have been plugged in online all last week, waiting to see when these little eagles would hatch, and they finally named the two of these birds the president and the first lady. And what's really amazing is the two of them would take turns sitting on the eggs. The mom would sit on the eggs, and the father would go hunt and fish for food, and then he would come back and they would switch places, making sure to keep the eggs warm, making sure that their babies would survive. And then this happened. At least some of you have a heart. And tens of thousands of Americans tuned in to watch this. What does this say about us? It says that we are fascinated with new life. Friends, Easter is about new life. It's looking at Jesus, looking at his resurrection, and it's saying, we're here to talk about the one they tried to kill. The one who didn't stay dead. The one who rose from death. And to say it another way, Easter really isn't about only his resurrection. It's also a story, because the more you know his story, the more you know his story points to your story. His resurrection, his Easter, is about your Easter Sunday, whenever that happens to be in the future. When we tell this story well, somehow you and I make it into it. And we realize that the empty tomb is also a picture of our own empty tombs. It's the ultimate in irony. Jesus says, strike me down, and I will rise and become more powerful than you could ever possibly imagine. It's the story of the Hydra. Cut off one head and two will come back in its place. No matter how much you try to hurt Jesus or kill Jesus or to tear Jesus down, his love and his grace and mercy continues to grow and new life continues to come. You cannot keep him in the grave. You cannot keep his followers in the grave. And I want to talk about three things from his story today. I want to talk about two cloths, I want to talk about two angels, and I want to talk about one gardener. First, to the two cloths. When Peter and John showed up at the tomb, they didn't see a gardener and they didn't see any angels. Perhaps they were there, but they didn't notice. They went into the tomb, and what they saw were two cloths. One of them was kind of a mess at the end of the table where Jesus had been laid. That was the big one. That was the one that covered his body all the way down to his feet. But there was another one that the Gospels talk about. They use in the Greek a word meaning napkin. There was a napkin for his face that was folded neatly. Moms, I'd like you all to know that Jesus, even when he rises from the dead, even after 3 days dead, Jesus folds his laundry. And for those that think maybe this is a grave robbery and somebody came in and they stole the body, why would they take the time to fold the cloth? You'd think you'd want to get in and get out. But no, this was folded. Now when Mary goes to the tomb and Mary looks in the tomb, she doesn't even mention the two cloths. She doesn't even mention the two cloths. She instead sees something else at the head in the foot of the table where Jesus was laid. She sees two angels. Two angels. I want to show you a picture of the Ark of the Covenant. Anybody here like Indiana Jones? Well, then you know all you need to know about Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? So the Ark of the Covenant, of course, was the greatest weapon that the Hebrew people had. When they were faithful to God, this ark could protect them. Inside of it were the two stone tablets of the Ten Commandments that Moses received from the Lord. And even in battle, it says that, for example, when the Hebrew people went to fight against Jericho, They didn't send the warriors out front. They didn't have any tanks or elephants or whatever out front. They sent the priests, they sent the worship leaders, and they sent this gold box. And the warriors trailed behind them. The trumpets and the worship music was the mighty battle that they waged on the city. And they marched around the city with this gold box and the worship leaders out front, and the walls came a tumbling down. And at the top of this box is something that we often call the mercy seat of God. And this is the reason. Because think back to the temple, and you have all these different places where the people were allowed to sit, the Gentiles and the women. There's the men, the priests were up front. But this area up here would have been divided with a giant veil that nobody could enter except for the high priest once a year on the Day of Atonement. And when the high priest once a year, who was fully purified, who was ritually cleansed, when it was time for him to come in behind the veil, he would come in behind and he would bring with him the blood of the sacrificial animal. And he would take it to this box. And there you would see at the top two angels that are bent over, one at the head, one at the foot, with their wings touching. And that was considered sort of the back of the chair of God's throne. And right there in the middle, he would pour the blood onto the seat of the mercy seat, as if to show to everybody that this very place, I mean, God existed in the temple, God was in the courts, but right here behind the veil, God was, and then specifically on the mercy seat, that was the closest God could be to his people. There's even a legend that when the high priest went in, right before they went in, they would tie a rope around his ankle, just in case he wasn't purified enough, and he dropped dead in the presence of God. And then who was going to go in after him, right? No, you just drag the old guy out. And so think to Jesus' tomb, and what did Mary see? She saw two angels, one at the head and one at the foot. They were obviously worshiping that spot. That spot was important. And I wonder if she looked at the mercy seat, I wonder if she saw perhaps on that stone maybe some drops of Jesus' blood after he was crucified. I wonder if she saw that. And I wonder if she understood what this meant. Because when Jesus was crucified, what happened to that veil in the temple? It was torn. As if all of the world was saying to all of the rest of the world, no longer do you not have access to God. God has come to you. So we have the story of the two cloths. We have the two angels. And then there's one other thing that Mary sees. It's the gardener. So Mary comes out of the tomb. She meets a gardener, but she doesn't know who the gardener is. We know it's Jesus, but I'm kind of wondering what Jesus was doing. Was he playing games on her? Or was he perhaps tending the garden? One of my favorite pictures of Jesus, and you rarely see it on Easter Sunday, is this one. It's stained glass, and you see what Jesus is holding in his hand? A shovel. And I think, you know what, that's interesting. Because where did Jesus' story start? Started with cloths, swaddling cloths, right? And it ended with the cloths at the tomb. It started with angels singing in Luke chapter 2, and it ended with angels there worshiping the spot where he was risen. And where does the story of all creation start? Genesis chapter 2, in a garden. And what's God doing there? What's he doing as he's creating things? He decides he wants a son. He decides he wants a daughter. And he starts playing in the mud. And he's kind of making this statue of sorts. He's molding it. And then he breathes on it. He breathes on it, and he also gives this little statue his own image. And Adam is born. And then later, Eve is born. And what do we find Jesus doing after his resurrection in this garden tomb area? What's Jesus doing? I wonder if he didn't have a shovel. And I wonder if he wasn't planting some things. Because Jesus knew the growth wasn't done. Death did not win. In fact, his resurrection has won. I want to share with you one last picture. It's one I came across this week of a picture of the Roman Colosseum as a planter. And how appropriate it is that Colosseum would be kind of breaking at the seams as this plant is growing forth. See, the Roman Colosseum was like a big theater, but what you saw on the outside wasn't even half of what it is. Because underneath it were layers of labyrinths and tunnels. There were lifts. There were prison cells where gladiators were stored, where animals were stored. It was this intricate maze so that you could put on the greatest show on earth. And in fact, underneath all of this, there were all kinds of different things that you can't possibly imagine. If you go on tour there today, you'll see that it's actually quite different. A Cambridge botanist went there, my alma mater, Cambridge University, and he went there and he discovered a plant, and he said to himself, there's no way that this plant has ever existed in Italy or specifically in any part of Europe. And then he looked around and found more plants that had never been there before. He went back to his lab, he studied the one particular plant, and then discovered that almost all of these had come from either Libya or Tunisia. And then he had to put a theory out there. And in his writings, he said this, I know how these plants made their way to Rome. They came in the fur of the lions. They came in the fur of the animals that were there to kill people. They came in the fur of the animals, the lions that were there to kill sometimes innocent people, sometimes Christians who were being persecuted because they believed in Easter and proclaimed Easter. And as I think back now to this whole thing, these are the seeds that fell out of the fur of the lions. The lions are long gone. The Roman Empire, with all its power, is long gone. But those seeds are still bearing fruit. And there's still life that's happening there. They are witnessing to the power of life over death. And you can kill and persecute Christians. You can kill and persecute the Lord himself. But he won't stay dead. And neither will we. You can build a Colosseum as a death trap, but God has a way of turning bloodshed into life. And that's our story. That's the Easter story. Jesus took on death for us, and then after it won, it realized that it had really lost. Death somehow won the match on Friday, but in winning the match on Friday, it lost the fight on Sunday. And next week, we're just going to keep reading through the story. As Jesus appears, as Jesus gives hope to people, and as we learn how to be Christians who give that same hope to people. I hope you'll join us. And just a reminder to everyone, we're about to pass out our offering. If you would, fill out your welcome card. You can drop that into the offering plates as they go around. And then when it's time for the Lord's Supper, we're actually going to serve you on the floor this morning. And so our ushers and our pastors, we're going to be out there serving y'all, but it's our honor to open up this table to you today. God bless you all. Happy Easter.